Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Movement Talks. She has a Master of Science in Conflict Studies and Mediation and a Master of Fine Arts in Dance. She's an award-winning performing artist with a 30 years career, and she's the author of Changing the Conversation, the 17 Principles of Conflict Resolution. I had the pleasure of meeting her during one of her workshops in Amsterdam, and I'm very excited to speak with her again. Today, Dana Kaspersen is with us. Hello, Dana.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here with us. How are you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
Great. Also here. Where are you at the moment?
I am in Vermont at the moment, in the forest.
Nice. Nice. Mm. Are you enjoying your time there?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's almost spring and the birds are arriving and it's beautiful.
Yes. I think we need all a bit of this kind of rebirth moment.
Yes.
Nature is like plays with us. So yeah. I would like to ask you, I mean, you have an amazing career as a performer first, as a maker, and then you took a bit of a different direction, and you went into dealing with conflict. And how did this happen, and what exactly are you doing? Tell us.
So I was working, as you say, for many, many years in theater and dance and writing also a lot in those mediums. And at a certain point, I guess I just noticed how much destructive conflict was happening, both in my own life and in the people around me. And some part of me just thought, there's just gotta be some other way that this can happen. Is this really necessary? And I started studying kind of just for myself to just imagine what would it look like if things went differently when there's difficulty. And eventually I got more and more fascinated with it as I saw how things do unfold differently when we develop different approaches, when we shift the way we're looking at things. And so I eventually got a degree in conflict studies and mediation. Initially, I was, I thought that I needed to keep those two practices different, separate. And I was afraid on some level that if I tried to combine them, I would weaken one or weaken the other. And I valued both the practice so much that I thought, okay, now I'm going to be really serious about this. And then I got involved in a public dialogue project. And it was terrible. I was reflecting on it. I was like, wow, those people were so uncomfortable. They felt afraid to talk. They were stiff. The room was stiff. There was like no motion. As in English, you say, you threw the baby out with the bathwater. all of this practice that we do as dance thinkers of the transformation of the present moment. If you set up a physical model that really functions as a way to either express something or to receive or to reflect, then people dive right into it. Because everybody, of course, is in a body and everybody is always, even if they're not fully conscious of it, is processing their experiences through their body. And so it's been really fascinating to think about, okay, how can I use all the technologies of our practice as artists, as dance artists? How can I take the technologies, so to speak, so the way we think about and the way we work on things, not so much the outcome, but the technologies, and how can I move those into this other field and see what happens and see what they can do? So that's where I've been focused on in this last period. And the more I've done it, the more I've realized that there's no border between fields. It's all the same thinking. And I've come to realize that choreographic thinking, so thinking about how do we organize ideas physically, is present in every single participatory event that we're part of, whether it's a conversation or you know, walking into a bank or a political rally or a, it's always being shaped. Our experiences are being shaped by the way we and others physically organize ideas and situations and bodies. So that's what
Interesting. And can you give us some example about something that you applied in your workshops that you learned, that you took from your experience as a dancer or as a choreographer or maker?
So I last year I was working on a project with the Michael Douglas Collective, and called the Polarity Party. And part of that project was to really try to figure out, okay, what do, as performers, what do we practice? Not, you know, on a obvious, more surface level, but as we're practicing what we practice, what are we practicing, so to speak? So if we step back a level, what are we doing? And thinking the same way in terms of the choreographic thinking and building kind of like a list for ourselves to say, all right, what is it? And so, in choreographic thinking, we're making decisions in all of these categories all of the time, even if we're not conscious of it. So, for example, in one of the first projects I did, so let's say what do we do with space? What decisions do we make about what space means and how we organize it? And so, obviously, if we're making a performance, we're making decisions about how bodies are organized in space, how we relate to the space, what if different sections of space have different meanings or purpose. So for example, an audience, if there's an audience in the stage, we've divided the space into those two sections, and each participant in each section, and the spaces are very differently configured. So for example, in this project called the Not Unknot, which is one of the first ones I did, which was focused on immigration, I made a really big triangle in the space with just some tape. And then I divided that triangle into three parts. And so I said, okay, each one of these parts means something different. There would be statement A, statement B, statement C. And then there would be 100 people or whatever inside the triangle. And then they were asked to walk to the section of the triangle that accorded with their beliefs around these issues that had to do with immigration. So what happened was it was in Germany, and the first two questions were, the first question was A, my ancestors are of German descent. B, my ancestors are not of German descent. C, my ancestors are of a mixed ancestry. And so they would divide according to that. And then the second section was, I feel German. I don't feel German. And then in the first question, we'd find all the people who are Germans in one place, immigrants in the other place, and then a mixture. I mean, many immigrants would go into the German spot. Many Germans would actually leave the German spot and move around. And so as we progressed through these series of questions that had to do with identity and then specifics, people started to change every time. So the groups became more permeable. So by giving space meaning, we were able to help people get a sense of the fact that their relationship to these questions was much more complex than is maybe obvious at the beginning.
Great. So could we also say that like dancers or movers or professionals of the field of dance could eventually be advantaged compared to the others because they're conscious about their body, they're conscious about the relationships also of the bodies in space in terms of eventually resolving conflict or facing a conflict in a different way?
Well, I think, in my experience, you know, we as dancers are no better at conflict than anybody else, just generally speaking. I think that what we can do is become conscious of how what we practice as dancers could become useful in those fields. I think we're not automatically set up to do that because how we think about conflict is usually framed in something that we've learned from childhood, from school, from the communities that we grow up in.
And so do you think that body language is underestimated in terms of like also conflict and observing also how the other people move or place themselves in a situation could be helpful, for example, to eventually avoid conflict.
That the way our bodies respond to stress and the way we focus our attention and how that impacts our body is a really helpful thing to notice, and particularly to notice how we're organizing ourselves in spaces and how that's impacting our ability to communicate. In general, my approach is not to avoid conflict, though, just to be clear, but rather to let conflict become something that's useful when it occurs. So yes, to avoid destructive conflict, that yes, the body can be part of us, helping us understand what's happening in ourselves and also in the people that we're in connection with. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, we can say that, I mean, conflict is in itself inevitable, and but what we can eventually avoid is to make it become, I don't know, violent maybe, or like...
destructive in some way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the basic things that I find is most useful is to notice that oftentimes in conflict, when something happens, we jump up to the level of what I would call strategies. So this should happen. No, this should happen. We start fighting about the strategies. And though it feels like it's obvious what's happening, often we don't really know what's important for people. And so developing the kind of practice in your own mind of when you find yourself in that situation saying, okay, let me just take a step back here. Let me think about why do I care about this? What would that strategy help with? So take it down, figure out what's going on with the other person. Why do they care about this? What's important to them on the more basic level? So if we're arguing about, let's say, what kind of a car to buy, but down below that, there's reasons that we're caring about that. I might be worried about one thing and you're interested in something else. So if we can get down to that level, the conversation opens up much more. So there's many possibilities that come out from a conversation that's focused on what people need and what they're interested in on a more basic level. And inside those kind of conversations, because in conflict people, they're stressed, you know, usually, and there's a lot of attacks that happen in conflict. So I see a lot of the work in conflict as an internal practice that people can develop on their own, no matter what the people around you decide to do. You can't control anybody else. You can develop a practice of noticing how you're placing your attention. Am I primarily focused on the attack this person is offering, or am I primarily giving them attack? Or am I focused more broadly? Okay, what is going on here? Why does this keep happening? What do people care about? And within that, developing the practice to notice the attack, but primarily listen past it for the information that's behind it. So detaching ourselves from being controlled by attack in a situation so that we can stay with ourselves and listen, and then offer information without offering attack as the first thing that we do.
And did you notice that maybe also the body somehow could take part into it? What could we, like you are saying, like listening to the other, for example, trying to say, to understand what this person wants to tell us, or, and what eventually the body, how do you think the body should place itself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one thing I think about is that emotions are like signals. They're like, if your needs, you know, the things that you care about, if they had a big flag with a flag, a big like pole with a flag on top of it, that's the emotions. So the emotions are a signal that lead you down to what's important. And those things we feel so strongly in our bodies. And oftentimes we either just act them out, like act out the emotion, or we repress it. And the body can be a place where we really notice those and say, okay, ooh, I really feel, you know, I feel this tightness in my chest and kind of pulling my neck down. What is that about? So that we can let those things be signals that lead us to uncovering what it is that we really care about. And it's also what I found is that the body is also a really great place for imagining situations and noticing their impact on you when you're not in the stressful situation. So, for example, a simple thing you can do is say, okay, I'm in this conflict with this person. So you imagine one hand as yourself and one hand as the other person. And then notice if you start moving the hands toward each other, notice the dynamic that you feel. Notice what you tend to want to do with those hands. And your body is of course carrying all the information about how you're experiencing the conflict. And if you give it a physical form, it becomes more evident to see what's going on. So that can be a way of analyzing your own situations to say, oh wow, like I really hesitate to bring those close. All right, what is that about? Or I find myself one hand really getting on top and the other is getting pushed down. What does that mean? So we can both use the body as a place where we notice what's happening, and also we can externalize ideas into more abstract use of the body as a way to give ideas and situations form so they become more visible to us and we become more able to really take a look at them.
And this is, I guess, like this, you tried it also on yourself. And did this help you also to understand the others a bit more? Like in terms of like by doing also all these exercises in which you internalize, I mean, you understand what your body feels. Did this help you eventually by observing the others to understand better what is going on with them?
Absolutely. So I've just written a new book, and in that book, I have at the end of every chapter a practice session that is physically based, because I've found that some of the most powerful ways to practice. So, for example, in a project. As part of this, the Polarity Project, we made a version that goes online instead of in person. And in that, there's a section where I ask people to imagine themselves and then to put a chair across the room and imagine the other person in that chair and to notice the dynamic they feel between. And then to imagine if you ask yourself, okay, I feel polarized, I feel separate from this person. So if I were to ask myself, where's the borderline that I feel between us? And then to make that physical, put it on the floor like with a pencil or something. And then to start to get up and move toward the borderline, notice what happens, come back, and to imagine what it's like to mentally try to move that borderline toward the other person, toward yourself. Investigate by your internal experience your relationship with that other person. And then you can step out of it and look at the configuration from the outside. And then there's other practices where, for example, you might go sit in the place of the other person and imagine how power is working in the situation. Imagine it from their point of view. So you can use your body's ability to imagine its automatic ability to take on ideas and to kind of. I think about Oliver Sacks. He said, we are always dreaming. Our mind is always dreaming. We're only constrained in the daytime by the reality we encounter. And so I think the body is always in this state of understanding and putting things into a synthesis. And we can use that ability as a way to try to get what's going on in a system for another person, for ourself. So I think it's really applicable in a broad manner.
I think a good invitation is like, I mean, to start observing a bit carefully ourselves, no? Like observing ourselves also from the inside. So then this facilitates also the approach to the others. I have a question concerning, I mean, because you did several projects and they were all different from each other. And I know that you tailor according to the situation. But I'm just curious to know, like, I mean, what did they give you? Like, I guess, like, you get every time a new experience and you're getting reached and you discover new things.
Mm.
Can you tell us a bit what you discovered in these different projects?
Mm. So I did a project called Understand, which was focused on racism. And in that project, I was thinking about how difficult it is to talk about racism. And initially the project was developed in the United States, which has a, you know, as obviously at the moment, it's really evident, a huge amount of racism, you know, of a specific kind. And I was in the United States, it's very difficult to talk about race. People get nervous and afraid to step into it. And there's sometimes a belief that it's not possible to really understand the experience of another person. And then people become even more separate because they don't want to intrude or they don't want to make the wrong move. And I started thinking about that and I thought about how dance artists, performers, a big part of our practice daily is to take on the ideas, the physicality, the motion of others. So we practice doing that. We practice kind of stepping into the body of another. And I think that's a beneficial kind of transgression, let's say. If we think about the other in racism, there's a worry about transgressing. And so I think separation increases when there's that kind of worry. And that doesn't mean, of course, that we should think we really fully understand other people. We cannot be inside their head. And at the same time, if we become afraid, then it gets worse. So I started thinking about this action of dance workers as a kind of beneficial transgression for society and asking myself, what would it look like if we could build some kind of a model where anybody could step into it and take that kind of an action and have it increase connection without it being oppressive or invasive. And it was really interesting working on that project. I was in New York. I worked with a group of young dance artists, and I invited whoever wanted to come whenever they wanted. So I was in the space for 3 hours every day for a while, and people came and went. And the experience of trying to build that model was really informative for me in terms of recognizing that what we take from each other, what we're able to receive from each other, really depends on the format within which it's being offered and received. And so I went through a lot of different iterations, different versions of what that might look like. I tried at one point to have a camera, and then I tried to have projections, and I tried to have it people do it back and forth to each other, to just two people. But I eventually found that we found, because we really experimented, just we did so many experiments, that if it was circular, so it wasn't having to give back and forth, but it was one person offering, another receiving, and another passing it behind them. That when we place the whole thing in a framework that says there are going to be experiences around each question that differ, and at the same time, I can hold the experience of another next to mine. And to examine how that works physically and what doesn't work and what works. So it was a really good process of diving into the details of what it means to offer through physical motion.
Yeah. Is the fact that we embody a culture and we are different from each other, is this affecting eventually the way we can also face like conflict, or the way in which we need to be able to understand all these tools that you are offering?
Mm. So when I go to different communities, different countries, I always work in advance with a group of local people to figure out what needs to be adapted, what doesn't work, what do we need to bring in, to accommodate or to make have it make sense for the culture. And I found that, you know, there's certain things, like, for example, in some cultures, women and men who are not who don't know each other don't touch. So that needs to be adapted in that way. So you can't use touch in that situation. And then it's helpful for me to just step it back a category and say, okay, so what in that action that I had where there was a touch, what was the goal? And how could I make a different choreographic decision in that same category of relationship between bodies? What different choice could I make that would move it toward the same goal? What I found more than, so beyond that, I found that people tend to respond in their bodies the same. Everybody's receiving, they're experiencing in their bodies, they express through their bodies. What I found actually is that the way the topics are framed changes in country to country. So for example, I took that racism project to Germany. And in Germany, because of the history of World War II, you can't use the word race in Germany because it's connected to the Nazi idea. And so we had to refigure all the questions to not talk about race, which in the United States is like what everybody talks about. And so to talk about racism in Germany too. So how do we talk about racism without talking about race? So that was a really interesting transition. And in terms of the bodies, so far my experience is that when you find a model that doesn't transgress any social norms, so anything that, you know, is taboo or anything like that, then people tend to have the same type of experience.
Thank you. I mean, it was amazing to listen to you. It's always amazing. I of course, I read and I have it, Changing the Conversation, the 17 Principles of Conflict Resolution, which has been translated in how many languages?
I think 8.
But you were mentioning also like that you've wrote another book. Am I correct?
Yes, right. And okay. I hope it will come out in cool. The next year. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, I mean, it's, yeah, congratulations, first of all. And I mean, I'm for sure I'm looking forward to read it. Thank you very much for being with us. And thank you very much for explaining us. I mean, I guess like everybody can like follow your work and the possibility of workshops on your website, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you very much again, Dana, and I hope to be soon in one of your workshops again.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Take care. Ciao.
Ciao.